Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. I am so excited. I feel like I have a new friend just from reading a memoir. You know that feeling where you read a book and you're like, this person is so nuts and so wonderful and her attitude is so great. And oh my God, don't do this thing you did but in the past in the memoir. Brianna Mattia has written a book called Never Leave the Dogs Behind. It isn't even her first book, but it feels like the first book written by a woman who's led such a crazy dog-filled, man-filled, wilderness-filled life. That how did she have time to write? It's so darling. I even love the beginning of the book, it says, for Bucket, Dagwood, Birdie, and Banjo. Okay, thanks, guys. That's what the book is sort of like. Okay, thanks, guys, to the dogs. It's called Never Leave the Dogs Behind. Turns out that a ton of people, I don't know if there's hundreds of thousands or millions of people, Brianna Mattia is a famous person on Instagram, like way famous. I have to tell you that I don't know how to get to Instagram. I have someone who does Instagram for me because I don't put myself in it. And it was all about you and your life. And you then became a target of dreadfulness, which didn't help because you were going through a divorce and there were dogs involved. So before anything else, I don't know how many of my listeners are like Instagram nuts. I'm going to call them nuts because to me, anybody who would follow somebody on Instagram and then attack them, kind of scary. But maybe that's what happens in social media. Maybe everyone who follows anybody gets ugly. I don't know. Yeah. I'm really sorry it happened to you. I just think you're delightful and wonderful and fragile and vulnerable and yet strong. And I'm really glad, you know, what didn't kill you made you stronger, I guess, right? Is that sort of how you look at it?
Yes, it's kind of, I mean, you know, it's sort of like, what else can I really do? I think at a certain point, you have to decide whether you're going to let yourself succumb to something or, I mean, those are the options, right? The only way out is through. So
I think that's right. I mean, or hide under a rock, which on some level you did by going into the middle of nowhere, Utah, Moab Desert, and great descriptions, by the way, but really harsh conditions. And yet you were like, this is great. A little tiny single wide trailer with four full sized dogs and no electricity. This sounds like a really good idea. Yeah. So talk for a minute, though, about the fame aspect, because you must kind of, I don't know, assume that when you encounter people, they do know who you are or of you. And I don't know whether that means you have kind of a defense mechanism or cautiousness or a chip on your shoulder, or do you think it's only some subset of humans that you might not actually encounter, whether they're interviewing on radio or reading your books. Do you think we all know who you are since you were so famous or are so famous? Or how do you think about that?
I mean, I don't think so. And I think I do not expect people to know who I am. I'm always flattered when people do. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I spend a lot of my time in these sort of outdoorsy hub cities, whether it's Salt Lake City. My fiance lives in Bend, Oregon. I'm obviously down in Moab. And so people do come up to me quite a bit. Someone said to me recently, they were like, I wasn't really sure it was you, but then I saw the tattoo of your dogs on your arm. And I was like, okay, that's definitely her. But it's great. I mean, because that's the thing about the internet, right? Is there is a handful of people who have decided they don't like me, and they've been able to make, well, they were able to make so much noise. But the majority, the vast majority of people who follow me on Instagram are extremely well-intentioned, either just relate to my love of dogs or my storytelling, or are sort of like, kind of like what you said in the beginning, like, oh gosh, let's just hold on for this ride. What on earth is this girl going to do today?
Yes. Yes. And just the way you do everything has this randomness that's adorable and delightful, but scary. You know, if I really knew you and really loved you in real time, I'd be worried all the time. What's she doing now? What bad decision has she made and made the best? You know, she made lemonade out of it.
Yep. That's my mother.
Yes. And you do actually, in the book, call her a few times when you've able to scrape together the money to buy a raw piece of desert on which you couldn't possibly afford to build anything, but it's going to be your home. Because you've decided it will be. Or the car, you know, that was worth X and now it's worth Y. And anyway, it doesn't run, but it's okay because it's called Bertha. And so it has a name just like the dogs. And you pat it like a large dog. You just have this way about you that's so enchanting. When these bad people said bad things about you, and a bunch of the book is about you kind of trying to deal with these, you know, barbs and arrows coming at you, you lost a lot of the sponsors. And I'm not sure everybody, certainly not very many people of my generation, which was the ancient generation, you know, we're kind of like, troglodytes or somebody that lived in a cave. We don't really understand. I get what the Kardashians are. I wouldn't want to be one, but I get what that is. But they make their own stuff and peddle it. But you tell your story, your genuine, unique, quirky, nutty life story. And then does Gatorade give you money to put a Gatorade in it? Or how does it work that you made a really good living at it and then all the money went away because of the mean people that said nasty things? How did that work? Because you're such not a fake, phony Kardashian type person. I don't understand how it works for a real person like you.
Yeah, I say consistently that I am far too soft-skinned for this industry. And I think what's interesting about the whole influencer social media stuff is that, you know, getting quote unquote famous these days is quite different than I think it used to be. And it's hard for people to maybe believe me when I say I am just as surprised by this as anybody. I was not expecting to achieve any modicum of fame. I started using an app that everybody else used on their phone. You know, it's not like I was going to auditions or I was getting an agent and being like, this is my end goal. I want to have this many followers. It was sort of like I chickened out. I always wanted to start a blog. You know, I've always been a writer. I've always been a reader. And I chickened out. And so then this Instagram app came around and I thought, you know what? These are short little captions. And why don't I just test the waters and kind of get my writing muscle going again?
Nice.
And over the course of several years, people really flocked. And I think it was sort of this combination of, I mean, like you said, I think it's fun for people to watch something that seems kind of crazy or risky going down when there's that nice little, a bit of like, a sense of being removed. You know, it's not your sister.
It's not your sister, your friend. Yeah.
But I think that that's a double-edged sword because you start to become a fictional character to people.
Right.
They start to think that they know everything about you, and realistically, you're posting maybe 2 minutes of your day-to-day life. You know, I'll post a little video of my dogs on my Instagram story, and people get attached, and it's great, but certain people seem to get attached in a very unhealthy way. But when I first started out, the internet was a little bit nicer than it is now. I mean, this was 2016.
Right.
And the concept of an influencer did not exist.
That's right.
That was like totally brand new. And so what happened is all of these companies, I can't say I've ever signed with Gatorade, but you know, I worked with a lot of outdoor companies, Cliff Bar, you know, all of these companies realized that people were not feeling personally, like they couldn't really relate to the advertising that I think companies were relying on. Nobody really watches TV anymore. So there wasn't really as much of an opportunity to market products. And so in the very beginning, oh my gosh, the amount of things that I got offered to just put on my page. I mean, like you said, they can sort of see the metrics that, you know, 300,000 people follow her, and on average she gets, you know, 3 million views on her profile every month or every 2 weeks or whatever it is. And so they started treating people's Instagrams like billboards.
Yes.
Like you are paying for advertising space. And I could have, and geez, you know, I think about it sometimes, maybe should have, if I ever want to build a house. you know, they would offer, I mean, I've got offered, like, you know, advertise this taser since you're a woman who's on her own a lot. You know,
it's that's funny.
I mean, the gamut of things that I was offered. And I think where my success came from was saying, I'm never going to use that. Like, I don't need something like
right.
that. And I'm not going to push just anything
to make a buck.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't. I think it's very transparent. I think people could see right through it. And I sort of stuck to, so I just kind of became like the dog lady, you know, because it was like anything pertaining to dogs, people knew that, you know, if I'm giving something to my own dogs,
right,
obviously I think it's worth, you know, so I do a lot of like dog supplements. I have this great fresh dog subscription food that I promote now. But on a whole, I treated my Instagram from the very start as a stepping stone. I always wanted to be an author. I always wanted to be a writer. And I sort of saw it as an opportunity to get a bunch of eyes on my writing. And then those little sponsorship deals allowed me to quit my 9-to-5 job, because I was working for a software company in 2016 and 2017. And I was able to supplement my income while I worked on my first book with social media stuff. And it was all great and dandy and wonderful. And I was very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about it. And I shared everything, anything and everything. And then all of a sudden, when you share your happy little adventurous life, and then your life kind of blows up, I've realized, you know, I understand why people were curious. And I think people became angry with me, because suddenly I didn't want to give the level of information that people were used to getting from me.
Right. Especially about a divorce with a husband who was addicted.
Exactly. And I struggle so much. And my second book, I mean, I wrote things in this book that I would never put on social media. And perhaps that sounds strange, because obviously both of these things are out in public.
So differently, though, Brianna, so differently.
Exactly.
I mean, I get offered books often where they say, oh, would you look at this book? Would you be interested in doing an interview? Because they're social media stars.
Yeah.
And so a publisher, leave aside Cliff Bars and Tide, you know, pods,
right.
A publisher decides, because someone has followers, really something very ditzy and superficial, I might add. I'm not saying names, because I get a lot of them. They make a book of it. So all of we real authors can't get a book deal, can't get an editor, can't get an agent. But if you have 300,000 anythings, even aardvarks, following you on social media, they're going to offer you a book deal. And the publishers are stupider than a bag of rocks, because the people who follow that stuff would never take the time or spend the money or sit still to read a book.
Yes.
I might also add that because I read so many books for this show, and interview so many authors, all of whom say it's the best interview anybody ever gave them. And I'm the first one that really understood all the nuances and depth of their book, which is extremely gratifying to me. But it means I can't read like pleasure books, but I listen to a massive amount of audiobooks while traveling. Yep. Ridiculous amounts of time to go play pickleball, because that's an addiction. Amazing. Which wouldn't have ruined my marriage like, you know, your husband's addiction ruined yours. But luckily, my husband's very tolerant. All of it is a segue into saying you've made an audiobook of this book. And even though I've read it, you have a beautiful voice and you're funny. So Never Leave the Dogs Behind is going on my Audible list, because I can't say enough cool and wonderful things about it. We could talk for really an hour about you and the and how you became what you are, because it's so clear that you were always a writer. I mean, you did write another book before this, which was very well received. I mean, like Publishers Weekly said, excellent. You know, I mean, it wasn't just other influencers saying it.
You know, that was my biggest fear. And I still sometimes, you know, when you get the imposter syndrome, it's late at night, you can't sleep, you're staring at the ceiling. I always say, I'm like, you know, would I have gotten a book deal? Because I certainly did not have the number of followers. I mean, what happened was, gosh, in 2017, an acquisitions editor from Simon & Schuster emailed me and just said, hi, I follow you on Instagram. This is who I work for, this publishing company. I think you have what it takes to write a book. And that was the first time anyone ever told me that. And so I hadn't considered, I mean, who starts writing a memoir when they're 26 years old?
You know, it was kind of like,
what on earth do I have to offer anybody? And I kind of just wonder, like, gosh, I hope that my book succeeded. My first book did so well because people really loved the writing. And I think, you know, based on the reviews, they did. And I really loved how surprised I think a lot of people were, because I think a lot of people were expecting what felt more like an influencer.
Right.
And in my first book, I made it such a point. I think I only wrote the word Instagram 6 times, because that's not my story.
No.
And especially even in my first book, it was less of my story. You know, I kind of talk about how I was able to quit my job and go live in my van, and because of
was not the lap of luxury, could we just say?
No.
All right, I got to have you read this section I've picked out, because it's one of my favorite and it's just so divine. So I don't think we have to really set the scene too much, except for to know this is a dog nut who already has dogs and now she might get some more dogs. But Underdog is a rescue that, in addition to all the other things that you were managing, you were volunteering or being on their watch list or something, right?
Yes.
Okay. So
I stepped up in a surprising situation, I guess you could say, and it worked out really. It was like the happiest time of my life. So I love this. I love this part of my book.
Good. Me too.
Okay. Should I kick it off?
Go for it.
Okay. When COVID hit, it hit Indigenous communities harder than most any other population in the United States. So it was no surprise that a whopping 92 dogs had been surrendered at a clinic in just one day. Now, the stigma of surrendering any dog to a shelter is often chastised, judged, chalked up as a form of cruelty. I myself am guilty of once thinking this way. But had three different families not all consecutively decided that Dagwood was too much for them, too wild, too this, too that, he'd had never ended up where he belonged, which was most certainly with me. To understand and admit that you cannot care for an animal or provide the type of life they need is honest. To seek a solution to better suit that animal, that isn't cruel at all. If the stigma was removed, perhaps we'd have more dogs safely brought to shelters as opposed to neglected or chained up or dumped on the side of the highway. Underdog had posted on Instagram detailing the overwhelming number of dogs they had taken on. Desperately in need of fosters, they wrote. Later that evening, as I sat on my porch, looking around at my entirely off-grid, 22-foot, sans-running-water trailer, I wonder just how desperate they were. Many rescues. You know what? As I read this back to myself, I'm like, you really were crazy.
You were crazy, but you're so funny telling it. I just love it. Carry on.
Thank you. Okay. Many rescues, albeit with best intentions, have foster requirements akin to college applications. You must have a 9-foot-tall fence and approximately 30 references, and home visits are required, and that home cannot be an apartment or a condominium, and it sure as shit can't be a trailer parked out in the middle of nowhere. In order to adopt Bucket all those years ago, I wrote down a fake address and crossed all fingers and toes that they wouldn't request a home visit. If they had, they'd have discovered the truth, that I was actually living on a 30-foot sailboat with, once again, no running water, air conditioning, or basic amenities of any kind. I cannot stress enough that I understand these rules are set with best intentions, but no dog I've ever known would choose a 5-by-10-foot concrete and wire cell over a cozy little apartment, or a daily walk around a condominium complex, or the spray of sea mist from the bow of a boat. I called Underdog to see if, despite my living arrangement, they would let me foster. I had barely finished the sentence before the volunteer said hurriedly, "Can you take a litter of 8? Almost instinctively, I felt the need to ask permission from someone, or negotiate with a roommate, or beg my mother like I had for every animal I ever saw as a child. But this was my property. This was my life now. I didn't need to ask anyone to do anything. 11 dogs in a 22-foot trailer? I thought to myself, yeah, why not? The first time I held them, I could fit 4 of them in my arms at the same time. They couldn't have weighed more than 3 pounds each. At first glance, they looked like they couldn't have possibly come from the same mother, but res dogs, as they're called, are the ultimate mutts. You never know what you're going to get, Forrest Gump would say. 2 of them had fluffy black fur with white markings on their faces. One had a brindled coat that was as short as a pit's. 2 were white, but only one of those was fluffy. 1 was brown with distinctive little eyebrows. Another brown and white spotted. 1 had a marking on his forehead that looked like a rising flame. I drove slowly up my driveway, easing through every turn as though the 2 travel crates full of puppies were actually full of glass. Bucket, Dagwood, and Birdie rushed out of the trailer door and straight to the Jeep, as if they had smelled them a mile away. They surged around the crates as I lowered them both to the ground. Birdie's tail wagged eagerly. Dagwood's ears stood perched toward the puppy's high-pitched yaps. It only took half of a puppy to emerge from the first crate for Bucket to turn on her heel and leave, as if she'd just stepped into the wrong meeting room. She was as interested in them as I had assumed she'd be. Dagwood was most certainly amused at first, but had no problem playing the disciplinarian role. Some folks on Instagram were outraged by the videos I would share of Dagwood baring his teeth or lowly growling under his breath when the puppies would clumsily roll across his back as he slept, or pull his ear just a bit too hard while they played. Those types of gestures from dogs can be intimidating if you don't speak dog, and a lot of people don't speak dog. By then, dog was pretty much all I spoke. I could have written subtitles for each of their interactions, used a laser pointer on a giant photo of Dagwood's body language like a college professor. Not only did it fascinate me, it just made sense to me. It was straightforward and concise, and most importantly, it was honest. Stop. I don't like this anymore. Pay attention to me. I love you. So many situations don't call for much more than that. But humans are brilliant at complicating everything. I've always preferred the company of dogs.
Oh, man. I can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook. I love this book so much. Oh, I mean, the best thing, people, is that you get to meet all these dogs in these extremely dog-like situations.
And there's plenty of them.
Plenty of dogs and plenty of situations. And Brianna's there with the pliers pulling the porcupine quills out of the dog's nose. And it's just all nitty and gritty. And yet how you were living, and I dare say maybe are living, is so incredibly rustic. It makes rustic sound like it's a glamping or something. I mean, holy cow. And yet, it's what you want to do. And I think it does speak, And I don't know if this has anything to do with your big following on social media, but the book, to me, speaks to the idea that everyone has this fantasy. It's why that book about the woman walking across the Appalachian Trail with her broken boots, everyone loved that. I thought, I'm not reading that. I don't want to walk on any trail with a bunch of people. I don't want to. But a lot of people do. They want to do this kind of primal, rustic thing. And the way you live is somehow, I think we all believe in our heart of hearts, we should all be able to pare it down to, like you do, to the bare basics and just be present with the dogs in the place without all the cultural amenities and comforts. Now, not me really, because I really do want all the comforts. So, you know, call it princess. I don't know what word you want to use.
Pampered
or something. But I love that you did it. I love you for it. I have a friend in England, Daphne, my oldest friend. Her idea of a vacation from her house in the countryside in England, which is a giant pile, as they call them. You know, we'd think of it as something out of Downton Abbey. But the inside is lived in kind of like you live, with the pugs and the chugs and the cats. And her idea of a vacation is to go to the Shetland Islands and rent a bare-bone stone cottage with nothing in it. And she takes like a jar of raw honey. I'm not making this up. This is like, amazing. Okay, so I get Brianna Madia. There's a part of everyone that should be able to be as wild as you and as I don't know, primal as you. And your dogs, you sleep with them and you lie of them around you. And the picture of you, you're surrounded by dogs. Even if we all had three dogs or four dogs, we couldn't get them to all lie in a heap with us. But they lie in a heap with you because that's your normal, isn't it?
Yes, it is full pack behavior. We are together all the time. We do everything together all the time. And people say so frequently on social media, like, I feel like your dogs really do have such distinct personalities. And I think the way that I have made their lives has encouraged them to sort of, you know, when you have, and that's kind of how I feel about human beings, when you are sort of not boxed in, you really kind of develop this very strong sense of self. And people might think I'm crazy saying that I think that that's kind of what my dogs have done, but they have. They've been in so many different situations that their personality shines through because, I mean, they really are doing everything that I'm doing in life.
In their own way. People listening to this on my show will not think you're crazy. You're like one of the pack, but you're kind of like the queen. You're the queen of the pack because you go so many steps further than the rest of us. You know, we pay attention to our dog. Pilly Bianchi comes on with For the Love of Dog, and we're like, that's really cool. So dogs could learn language. So if we took more time to pay attention, we'd see they're noticing like 54 words already that we didn't even notice that they were noticing, including when we spell the words out. But you're living with them so intimately. I think it's just a great lesson to everybody in what it is to be human on a really raw level. And you are so honest and open about yourself. I commend you for that. And I'm sorry that you've had to take the barbs and slings and arrows of whatever the heck that saying is. But you kind of deserved it because you put yourself out there. And naive to think that there wouldn't be cuckoos. At least they aren't people stalking you in some murderous or sexual way. I don't know. Maybe they are. I hope that nobody stalks you.
I was going to say, they did put my address on the internet.
Yeah, but you mentioned that in the book. That was so uncool. Yeah. But your address is not exactly something you can Uber
to. I was going
to
say, good luck finding me.
Saying Mars. She's on Mars, so good luck finding
her. It'd be quite a journey for anyone
would be. Definitely a rocket ship. We've run out of time, but the book is called Never Leave the Dogs Behind. And I would just say never leave this book behind because if you have it with you, your life is just really enriched in so many ways. It's so funny and so touching and so worrisome when you do worrisome things. But you see, she's come out of it all. So you can read the book and know it has a happy ending in real life. You have a great career ahead of you as a writer, Brianna. I can't wait to read
so
every
much.
Other book you ever write. You just keep on keeping on and kiss all those dogs.
Oh, I will. Hundreds of times a day.
Excellent. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There were a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.